My name is Frank D. Driver Dixie 109. I was out on Highway 17, just south of the Camden line. It was down there in the heart of Wilsonville where I met my fate. She was standing outside the bar, said she was waiting for day. But I knew that that was just a lie, and I knew I was missing a losing kind. Well, I knew what we were both doing, and I knew you can't win. But when the light turned green, I reached across the sea, popped the lock and she slid in. She said she liked Mexican music, she knew a place if I had the time. Well, we had a few drinks and we danced a while. I pulled her close, she didn't mind. Then what I knew kind of slipped my mind, and I couldn't resist her kiss with a losing kind. Well, we drove around in my Buick, getting drunk and having fun. Well, we ended up at the Space Western out on Highway 101. Was around 3 a.m. we went out to this empty little roadside bar. It was there the cashier register was open. It was there I hit that guy too hard. But I knew when I hit him for a second time, it one attracts the other when they're the losing kind. Get out of there, and I felt like I was gonna be sick. And half hour later, the sleet started coming down, and that highway got pretty slick. I seen some lights in my rear view mirror. I guess I panicked and I gave her a gun. Hell, and I wrapped her around the telephone. South on Highway 101, well, she just stumbled out onto the bank and sat down in a pile. Well, I kicked out the driver's side window, but buddy, when I got out, well, all I had to greet me was a highway patrolman's 45. He looked at the red and then he said, "Son, you're lucky to be alive." "Well, sir, I'll think that one over if you don't mind. Now, luck ain't much good to you when it's the losing kind."
Thank you all for tuning in and listening. Your presence is much appreciated here on the WFMU dial. Stay tuned, more excellent programming to come. It's almost 6. I'm heading out. This has been Zoe. Be on WFMU. Till next time.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, live from Jersey City in New Jersey, that great state. It's great to be with you, and I appreciate you spending some time with me, whether you're listening live or in the future or wherever. I'm really excited about this show this evening because it covers something really important that's happening in tech that I don't think I would have been able to cover in this depth if I was just running an interview show, which I do. I do plan to run an interview next week, but something happened in tech last week that really deserves an extended discussion. We should take a look at what's happening at Google. You may have heard, if you follow tech press somewhat, you may have heard that Google convened its annual developer conference, Google I/O, out in Silicon Valley last week. I think it was last Tuesday, which would have been May 14, 2024. And they showed off a bunch of things that they were really excited and proud to announce to the world. And I saw it a little bit differently, and my fellow tech critics saw it differently. You wouldn't get exactly this take from most of the media sources that covered the Google I/O conference. They don't want to go too negative on Google for obvious reasons. But I want to sound the alarm on some of the things that they're doing. And so we're going to dive into some of the announcements, not all of them, that would take too long, but just the general thrust of the I/O conference, which was AI. Just to give the game away, this is going to be Google and AI, but not just that. There's a larger story here about Google that's been developing. I mean, really, it's been developing for years now, but it's this story has been accelerating, it feels like, in the last few months, in which Google is just it dismissed the slogan, "Don't be evil," which you may remember in the early days of Google. That was the unofficial slogan of the company, "Don't be evil." And as I explained on a past episode some time ago, the reason they chose that wording, it was a very, "Don't be evil" was a very specific wording for a slogan. What it meant at that time, in the late 90s and early aughts, what it meant was Google intended not to be Microsoft, because Microsoft, the so-called evil empire at the time, was this hegemonic force. It was bullying. It was uninterested in competition or innovation. It stamped out any good ideas it could find, and it just wanted to keep customers, especially business customers and consumers, using Windows and the Microsoft Office suite, that so that they could basically make money off of attacks. People didn't have any choice. They had to continue using Microsoft products. And it was at best mediocre. It was really, really a terrible time for the tech industry. And so Google, when Google was born, they said, "We're not going to be like that. We're going to be different." That was Google's promise. "We're going to be the company that actually tries to do things good for the world. We're going to try to actually make good technology that's actually useful. We're not going to exploit our customers, our consumer or business customers." And a few years after they initiated that slogan, I forget exactly when was the year Google quietly removed it from their official the part of the website where they said, this is our slogan. "Don't be evil" came down, and Google ever since then has left that slogan in the past, in the rear view mirror, if you will. But in the last few months, it seems like Google has just slammed on the accelerator. They want to leave the "Don't be evil" legacy as far behind them as possible, because they are driving to a new destination. And as I titled this episode, "What's Eating Google?" Let's dive into this question, friends, tonight, because it seems like Google is doing everything it can to embrace a completely different kind of ethos in its products and services, in its relationships with customers and partners in the world. This feels like a really, Google is developing into a much more hegemonic, bullying, and potentially harmful force than they have been in the past. And I thought that the I/O conference was a good example of that. Again, we're not just going to cover I/O. There's a couple of other developments I'm going to get to later about Google. But why don't we start with this I/O conference? There was a good AP news story that covered the highlights of the announcements from the I/O conference. Again, this was Tuesday, May 14. Google had this conference to talk, basically a day of advertising of all of its new announcements. You know how Apple has done that over the years, and the press just dutifully follows along. Not as much anymore, but for a while there, for a few years, the press would dutifully follow along and just paste in whatever the Apple presenters were saying, and that became quote-unquote news. Google's hoping to replicate Apple's success in getting free advertising in the content of major media sources in their technology sections. So if you look at the link, by the way, all of these links are at the playlist. If you go to WFMU.org, click playlist and comments, you can see these links. Basically, the whole run of show, which I may not get to all of it. I have so much material tonight. But you can read through everything that I've quoted. You can click through the links. And if you want, you can check me and you can see if you agree with my conclusions. And by the way, if you're listening in the future to a podcast or archive, go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and find the playlist link for May 20, 2024. It's the What's Eating Google episode. So there's this AP news story from May 15 from last week. The headline is Google Unleashes AI in Search, Raising Hopes for Better Results and Fears About Less Web Traffic. Okay, so basically, Sundar Pichai, who's the CEO of Google, stood up and said, we're going to be launching AI in search. We're doing AI here. We're doing AI there. And then other presenters came up who talked about, oh, we're adding AI here. We're adding AI there. Just every conceivable part of Google's product and service suite where they could add AI, even places where they couldn't conceivably add AI, they're adding AI. There's AI everywhere. But the big announcement, which is where I think the most number of human beings use Google day to day, unfortunately, is in Google Search. And Google said we are leaning hard into AI for Google Search. Now, Google Search is the product that made Google what it is. When it first launched, it was easier, friendlier, more convenient, and more accurate than all of the other search engines in the late 90s. And so everyone ran over to Google, and then Google then began its process of turning into Microsoft, figuring out how to lock people in and apply, in Google's special innovation, apply an incredibly intense but hidden surveillance on those users as they click through to links in the search results. Well, now what Google says is this golden goose, this thing that has made us what we are over the years, we're going to change it. We're going to be adding AI. You know, that magic word, we're going to wave the magic wand. AI is going to make everything better so that when you search for, let's say, fruits, we talked about this last week. If you missed last week's show, this is a callback. You can listen to it in the archives. But fruits that end in U-M. And I'm not sure, by the way, I never did get confirmation whether this was for real. But someone presented a screenshot on social media that claimed to have gotten the AI response from Google Search with a query, fruits that end in U-M, and Google came back and said, appleum, bananum, strawberrum, tomatum, and coconut. And so 404 Media, one of the co-founders, Jason Kebler, was on the show a few months ago, but one of the other editors there, Samantha Cole from 404 Media, wrote a story also on May 15. And Samantha ran the same prompt, fruits ending in And Google came back with a list of results that included, and this is, she said that this is validated. Okay, so you can trust 404 Media. So Sam Cole said, here's the screenshot of what I got back. And so fruits that end in Google AI search results came back with ahi, kos, eel, gak, haw, ale, and cow. Yeah. Ahi, kos, that's C-O-S. I don't know, cosine? I don't know. Eel, gak, haw, ale, and cow. Those are fruits ending in U-M. Thank you, Google AI. So just in that one example, that's a good case in point. Google is betting the farm, a very valuable farm to them. Not so much to me. I don't use Google search if I can avoid it. But for Google, that still really relies on all of the attention that comes into Google search and all of the monetization off of their surveillance of users as they use the site, this seems to be a problem when it can't even answer simple queries like that. But that's what Google wants to do. It wants to give you the answer on the search results page so that, this is key, so that you don't click into someone else's site. Google wants you to stay on Google. This has been a complaint that has been brewing for some time, even before this AI nonsense, that Google wants people to stay on Google products. They don't like people moving off their property and getting answers from anyone else. So what Google has been doing is they have been plagiarizing. They've been scraping all of the independent content sites all over the web and shoving it into this AI mixer so that when you search for something, they can push the button on their AI extruded glop machine and squeeze out some extruded text like ahi, kos, eel, gak, haw, ale, and cow, and give you the answer. And even though it may be complete nonsense, or it may actually be inaccurate, and for health and safety related queries, it might actually be actively dangerous, potentially fatal. Google doesn't care about that. What they care about is that you are not clicking into any other site. So they scrape the entire web, plagiarize it, mix it up so that it's all mushed and messed up, and then they squeeze it out like a chia pet and say, there's your answer now. So that's the idea behind AI and Google search. As I said at the I.O. conference, they listed many, many other areas where they claim AI is going to be present in this service or that product. But the big one is Google search. And so when you, and I hope you don't, but if you decide to use Google search, because I really think you should not use Google search, and here's yet another reason, that if you do use Google search increasingly, you're not going to be getting any sort of organic, accurate list of links to outside websites that actually have the answer that you're looking for. Okay, you're going to get some extruded mess of text that has come out of Google's AI plagiarism machine. And so the AP News story says, Google unleashes AI in search, raising hopes for better results. That's very generous of the AP to say raising hopes for better results. I mean, it's like when you see storm clouds roll in and you say the storm clouds, well, that's raising hopes for a sunny day. Well, not exactly. Not exactly. The AI in Google search does not exactly raise hopes for better results. It's actually the opposite of what you just said. It raises fears for me that search results are going to get even worse. And again, me personally, I don't really care because I don't use Google search if I can help it. But it should be a concern for all of us because most people out there think of Google as the way you search to get answers, to find things, to get information. It unfortunately, as you know, Google has become a verb. And just Google it, which is really annoying to me because now just Google it means you are just asking a $2 trillion company to hand you some potentially hallucinatory, extruded, plagiarized text, which could lead you into all sorts of harm and all sorts of problems. So if you see a friend who's reaching for Google search, tell them, stop, don't use Google. There's so many other alternative search engines out there. You can use DuckDuckGo, you can use Brave, you can use Kagi, there's a bunch of them. Just don't use Google, all right? AI is going to be showing up on Google search, and so the AP story says, Google rolled out a retooled search engine that will frequently favor responses crafted by AI over website links. You know, because why would anyone go to website links, says Google? You don't want to go to other websites. You want to just stay on Uncle Google's site. We're going to give you everything. Listen, we plagiarized everything for you already. Here, relax and eat an apple-um. Have a gack, okay? Have a gack. Why don't you eat a fruit ending in um? Just eat a cow. Eat a cow and have a gack and an eel and an ahi. Like all of those fruits ending in and just relax, okay? And a coconut. So here's what Samantha Cole wrote on 404 Media. This is sort of a wry, clever headline. She writes, a revolutionary new Google feature hidden under More tab shows links to web pages. Okay, so what's happening here is that Google, as the AP said, is retooling its search engine to often default to giving this AI plagiarism material. But there's this tab somewhere on the page, on the screen, that says More. And if you click or tap on the More tab, then there's going to be another option that shows the web filter, the so-called web filter. And if you go to More, and then you go to the web filter, and then you do your query, then Google promises, after that two or three step process, then Google says, we're actually going to show you websites, and we promise we're not going to show you AI nonsense. And so some people are kind of excited that there's still a way to use Google search to not be beset with all of this toxic sludge that the business model is now forcing upon them. And all I can say is, okay, first of all, you're trusting Google that they're giving you the best results. I don't know why you would continue to trust Google. And second of all, even if they do deliver good web-based results today, what's going to happen next week when they finally decide to turn off that feature, as Google has turned off so many other features and products that people have loved over the years? You know how vast and broad the Google graveyard is of pretty decent ideas that they've buried along the way? This is not a company you can trust, and it's not a company that you should get comfortable using. Okay, so just get off Google is all I could say. I want to play something. I want to play you a clip. This is a supercut from the Google I/O conference from last Tuesday, and see if you can notice any trend in what the speakers were excitedly talking about. This is it's almost a minute, and again, here are speakers from Google I/O, including CEO Sundar Pichai. Here they are.
AI, found the AI really useful.
AI, generative AI.
AI.
And that's the power of generative AI.
AI. Train AI. Toolkit. AI. Generative AI. AI.
Okay, there it is, friends. That was Google I.O., their conference last Tuesday, when the company and its representatives were excitedly announcing the new direction, totally not chasing a fad here. I mean, they looked at all the options for what they could do with their $2 trillion business, and, you know, it came up all AI all the time. We looked at everything out there. We are not just copying Microsoft and its OpenAI vassal partner there. Oh, no. No, we are innovative here at Google. We don't chase fads. AI. I'm just telling you, get off of Google search. Get off of Google if you can. Cory Doctorow had a nice comment. This is also on May 15. Bunch of good comment came out last Wednesday, the day after this I.O. conference. Cory, of course, writes a lot, has written a lot about the internet and internet business, and he's been on this show a number of times in the past. We like Cory here. His column from May 15 was called, "Even if you think AI search could be good, it won't be good." And he writes, in terms of Google's AI-driven search results that we're talking about here, he says, there are plenty of obvious objections to this. For starters, why wouldn't Google just make its search results better? Rather than building a large language model for the sole purpose of sorting through the garbage Google is either paid or tricked into serving up, why not just stop serving up garbage? Wow, what a radical idea. But you see, once you get to be Google and you have this monopoly, you don't listen to reason, and you certainly don't have, this company anyway, doesn't have a shred of ethics. So when you say, is it possible that this company, with its vast resources, might consider stopping serving up garbage? The answer is no. They're going to do what they're going to do, and they're chasing the AI fad, and they've scraped the web, and they have a giant mountain of hot garbage, and they are going to extrude it, baby, every time they can, and they're going to force it into the search results and into every other product they can. Doctorow continues, Google's 90% search market share was attained by bribing everyone who operates a service or platform where you might encounter a search box to connect that box to Google, spending tens of billions of dollars every year to make sure no one ever encounters a non-Google search is a cheaper way to retain your business than making sure Google is the very best search engine. Cory is exactly right here. You know, when you think, why doesn't Google stop making garbage? The reason is because Google has found it more convenient to write Apple a check for, what was it, $30 billion a year in order for Google to be the default search on iPhones. And so, again, it's all about locking in the users, preventing people or dissuading people from ever looking for an alternative or even knowing about an alternative. A lot of people out there don't even know that there's an alternative to Google. They're just like, well, it's garbage, but this is what we've got. I guess they're going to serve up garbage now. Okay, here we go. They don't even know, you know, because Google has paid a bribe to Apple to hide the other search engines. Apple, of course, says, we're all about privacy here at Apple. Really, Apple? You're taking tens of billions of dollars from the main surveillance capitalist in the world, and you're about privacy? That doesn't compute. And Google itself has gotten in trouble. Okay, so I don't know if you know this, but Google is in really hot water and antitrust lawsuits. Yes, plural lawsuits Matt Stoller wrote a piece just today, May 20, about the lawsuits, and he reminds us that there are actually two antitrust cases against Google. There's one that just ended, which is about search, and that was conducted in front of a judge. We're waiting for the judge's decision, the judge's ruling. And then the other one hasn't started yet. It's going to trial in September, and it's about Google's monopoly of advertising software. And that looks like it's going to be in front of a jury. And Google really, really does not want to go in front of a jury. Because I think they know people, once they see what Google is actually up to, the jury is not going to rule in Google's favor. And so there was this weird case where, as Matt Stoller reported today, Google actually handed the government a check trying to pay off the antitrust division. You can read the whole piece if you wanted. The link's up on the playlist. But my point is that there are multiple antitrust suits against Google right now. And the one that just ended, as he said, is the antitrust suit about Google search. And Jason Kent had some good questions that really summarize the antitrust complaints around Google search and summarize the main points of contention in this antitrust suit. This is from May 5th. Again, this is on the playlist. There's a little it's almost like a little slide that has some bullet points. The header is questions Google can't answer. There are four questions. Number one, if defaults don't matter, why pay billions for them? In other words, Google says, "Oh, we paid Apple however many $30 billion to be the default search, but this is no big deal. People use Google because they love us." Really? Really? If the default doesn't matter, why did you pay billions for it? Google has no answer. Number two, if scale isn't valuable, why store and use so much data? Here, Google says, yes, we have this vast scale. We have this vast globe-spanning network of data centers that store and process all the surveillance data we have on our users. But that doesn't make us a monopoly. We have lots of competitors out there. Don't look at our scale. That doesn't matter. Which, again, that's not a genuine article. They really have no answer because the vast scale of Google does play into the fact that they are a monopoly. Number three, if the ads market is so competitive, how can Google raise prices at will? Yeah, they say, oh, we have so much competition in ads. Yeah, but then we have other documentation that shows Google is just setting the price wherever it wants. It's fleecing people. That's what monopolies do. Number four, if Google's actions are so pro-competitive, why systematically hide and destroy significant documents? Yeah, oops, Google had this terrible problem of deleting key emails and other documents in the discovery phase of this trial, and who could tell why? Who can tell why that Google would lose all of those key documents? It's not like you expect us to store data. It's not like we have any expertise in that. Okay, so Google has no answer for these questions, and good on Jason Kent for boiling it down to those four. Google is in, as I said, it's in a lot of trouble in the antitrust arena, and we can only hope that the judge comes back with the obvious correct answer and some radically, I hope, harsh next steps, it could go all the way to a breakup of Google, which would be a great, great starting point for what we should do against Google. So you have this monopoly that is not listening to any reasonable pushback on its products or services. It is perfectly comfortable churning out toxic sludge and garbage every day. It's making things worse for its users, even as it continues surveillance of them. And as I say, that the government is taking notice, and there's this antitrust. And then on top of everything else, they are proudly announcing that they're going to be adding AI into everything. So that's the scene that we have with Google right now. It's not looking great. for us that we have an economy that is so dominated by this horrible bad actor. And yes, I know that Meta and Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Airbnb, there are so many other companies that are bad actors as well in their own ways. But tonight's show is about Google. What's eating Google? And so amidst all of this, this complete abandonment of their initial slogan of don't be evil, one could even say that Google has transformed more into Microsoft than even Microsoft dreamed it could do back in the late 90s and early aughts. I mean, Google really has taken on the form of the ultimate monopolistic bullying hegemony, hegemony in tech, exactly what they said they would never do. And so within all of this coverage about the Google I.O. conference, I happen to see a little story in the Wall Street Journal that did not have to do with the I.O. conference, did not have to do with AI being added into everything. I don't even think AI was mentioned once in the story, which is rare for a tech story these days. This was a Wall Street Journal story from May 15, last Wednesday. It was written by Austin Ramsey, who used to be at the New York Times and has written a lot about China and the Chinese Communist Party over the years and surveillance. And the headline is very simply, YouTube says it will block protest song in Hong Kong. And it's a short article. I found this very, very interesting. In the midst of all of this self-congratulatory nonsense that Google is engaging in last week, the story comes out that YouTube, which is owned by Google, we should call it Google YouTube. You are being surveilled when you use Google, when you use YouTube and any other Google service. So Google made the decision last week to remove all traces of a pro-democracy protest song in Hong Kong. So as the story says, YouTube said that it would comply with a Hong Kong court ruling, which is to say a ruling that comes from the Chinese Communist Party. YouTube said it would comply with a Hong Kong court ruling that banned the distribution of a protest song in the city. YouTube said that it would block videos of the song Glory to Hong Kong, and links to such videos would no longer appear on YouTube when viewed in the city. All right, and so what is this song, Glory to Hong Kong? Okay, Ramsey explains. Glory to Hong Kong was a popular anthem during the protest movement that began in 2019 when millions in Hong Kong took to the streets to oppose extraditions to mainland China. The movement grew into broader calls for democratic rights, but was crushed by authorities wielding a sweeping security law imposed on the city by Beijing in 2020. There's much more I could say about the 2019 to 2020 protests in Hong Kong, but the high-level summary, as I understand it, it was a massive pro-democracy movement where Hong Kong was pushing back fiercely. The people of Hong Kong were pushing back fiercely on the encroachment of the authoritarians from mainland China, from Beijing, the Chinese Communist Party. And, you know, much like the Tiananmen Square protests, it was put down pretty brutally. Now, I don't think they rolled tanks in Hong Kong, but there was violence, and a lot of the leaders were put in prison and were disappeared, and a lot of people left for Taiwan just to get out of there, and so the movement was just, it was just crushed. But the one thing, even after the authoritarians crushed the pro-democracy protesters, the one thing that they did not manage to totally crush was the videos on Google YouTube showing or playing this protest anthem, Glory to Hong Kong. And so the Chinese Communist Party called up Google and said, hey, we don't like this pro-democracy. Google says, don't say another word. It's coming down right away. Right away, sir. Anything else you need, just give me a call. Now, I want you to consider how many times over the years I've covered YouTube where there has been a video or a set of videos that people are screaming about that needs to be taken down. It's harmful, or it's hurtful, it's toxic in some way. People are saying, take this video down. And Google's response is always, oh, we're doing everything we can, but you know, it's very difficult to find every video that has, you know, the recording of this person getting assassinated on camera, or this person getting shot, or this other horrible thing happening on camera. Who could have, you know, the scale that we operate at, it's very difficult to bring these things down. The Chinese Communist Party calls Google and says, take down every trace of glory to Hong Kong. They say, done. Consider it done. No problem. Because Google is motivated by power and money. They have no ethics. There is no sense of pushback. You want us to take this down? No. Why don't they say the same thing? Well, you know, there's so many videos out there. Who can find them all? No, they wouldn't dare to say that to their authoritarian minders from Beijing. Yes, right away, sir. Right away. That video is coming right down. So, hey, I have a little song I'd like to play for Google. Since Google took it down, I think it'd be nice if we heard a little bit of it ourselves. Take this, Google. That again is Glory to Hong Kong, the protest anthem of the pro-democracy protesters, and the song that Google now refuses to show or link to when searched for by users in Hong Kong because of a request from the Chinese Communist Party. A court ruling in Hong Kong, but we know where that comes from. I think that's very indicative of where Google is right now. What's eating Google? What's eating Google? I think we're beginning to see it. You know, they're chasing this fad of AI. They're delivering garbage to their users. They continue surveilling everybody. But when the call comes in from Beijing, yes, sir, right away, stop everything and remove the pro-democracy anthem right now. But other people who have some other complaint, a very valid complaint, why is this horrible video up showing the murder of someone I love? Google says, who can possibly find all of those copies? It's shameful. It's shameful that we've gotten to this point in tech. When I think back to what Google was in the 90s and the pledges and the promises that they made and the optimism that we all had that this was going to be a different kind of company, you know, maybe I should have seen it coming. I don't know. It's hard not to feel cynical. But it also feels like companies weren't always this predatory. I mean, Hewlett-Packard was run by two guys for a long time. They made a lot of money, but they didn't turn out like this. HP, while Hewlett and Packard were alive, was a pretty well-run company. It didn't do deals with authoritarian governments and shut down pro-democracy sentiment. This is shameful. What does that matter with people at Google? I don't get it. I mean, I could guess what actually is going through their minds, but I'm not going to. I can only look at the outcomes. There was one other thing, by the way, I wanted to bring up about this I.O. conference. They have this, Google has this thing called Project Astra AI Agent. Of course, yet another AI product, AI-related product. And this is the thing, well, let me just read you this thing from Business Insider, because this ties into something that Chris Gillard and I talked about last week. Here's Business Insider from May 14, the Google I.O. recap. Quote, in the Project Astra AI agent demo, a Google employee walks around the DeepMind office in London. DeepMind is the Google is a Google AI team. Google employee walks around this office, which Project Astra recognizes, and asks Gemini, the AI, Google AI chatbot, basically, if it remembers where she left her glasses. Project Astra replied that she left them next to an apple on her desk in the office. You see the reference of apple? Shouldn't that have been an applum? Anyway, the glasses had been left next to an applum on her desk in the office. She walks over there, and lo and behold, there are her glasses by the applum on her desk. The AI agent, quote, remembered the glasses in the background of previous frames from the phone's live video feed. Do you see what's happening here? Google says, if you install our AI agent, who's going to be your buddy throughout the day, you can, it has incredible benefits. It's going to blow your mind. Can you imagine that you can ask an AI agent, where did I leave my glasses? Oh my goodness. We have achieved something monumental in the tech industry. Let me say it again. Where did I leave my glasses? And the AI agent says, it's by the applum. Oh, man. Wait till they hear about this back home. I mean, I'm goofing on this, of course, because this is such a pedestrian and stupid example. Have we ever had anything in human life that allowed us to find where we left our glasses? I don't know about you, but when I can't find something that I've misplaced in the apartment, it's going to sound radical to you, but I walk around until I find it. It's incredible, I know. I use my eyes, I use my brain and my feet. All of these systems work together, and my intelligence, not AI, but actual human intelligence, processes the data until I see where I left my keys or book or whatever. So anyway, this is stupid. AI, Google says an AI agent will tell you where you left your glasses. Okay, so let's pretend someone is kind of intrigued by that. I think this is such a dumb example, but let's say someone was actually intrigued by that. Do you understand the level of surveillance that has to go on in order for that little interaction to take place? It's what Chris Gillard and I were talking about last week. We were quoting Sam Altman, who said, I want to be, and Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI that makes ChatGPT. Sam Altman said recently, essentially, I want to make an AI agent that knows everything about you, and you're going to need to share everything in your life with this agent so that it can answer stupid little questions like, where did I put my glasses? So Google loves, it freaking loves this idea, because if you're willing to sign on for such a stupid little benefit of where are my glasses, Google in return gets an incredible treasure trove of surveillance data about your life, because now you have a phone or a camera, something on your body that's following you around. And and taking video of everything and feeding it back to Google for processing. I mean, Google is not content. Let me tell you, Google is not content surveilling your search queries, your Gmail email contents, your Google Docs contents, your Google Sheets contents, the relationships, your locations, where you go on the web, what you do on your Android phone. Google is not content with all of that, and I could list 20 more categories of surveillance. No, no. When Google says we're going to launch AI, what they mean is we're launching more surveillance. We want more data from you. We want to be more intrusive. We're going to be more secretive as we become more exploitative of you and your data. And someone looking at this deal would say, well, what's in it for me, Google? And Google says, we're going to tell you where you left your glasses. It's next to the Applum. Why anyone would choose that deal is beyond me, except that's not how Google words it. They have this great, great announcement. AI is everything. AI is everywhere. Look at this thing. We have an AI agent that's going to use its AI brain to tell you where your AI glasses are. It's probably the surveillance glasses with AI in them that you lost. It's by the Applum. I mean, the only way to extract yourself from this horrible deal is just to disconnect from all of it that you can, to get off the Google ecosystem. Do it as soon as you can. Every day you stay in, it gets a little bit harder down the line to extract yourself. What's eating Google? You tell me, if you leave a piece of metal out in the rain and it gets eaten away by rust, what's eating at that? If you leave a slice of bread out for a couple of weeks and it gets eaten up by the mold, what's eating the bread? I don't know. I mean, it's the same question. What's eating Google? Google has turned. It's like milk that's been left out for about 10 years. It's gone beyond curdling. It's beyond repair. It's beyond any kind of redemption. Google is irredeemably corrupt. That's what's eating Google, corruption. My advice is to get off Google whenever and wherever you can. I know it's difficult to get off of it completely, but still get off Google whenever you can. Because as bad as it is today, just listen to what they told you last Tuesday. They plan to make it much, much worse for you. So get off Google. Couple of last little things I want to say. On the playlist, this is under a header called In Other Dystopian News, so we're going to leave Google just for the moment. Speaking of AI, there was this in the wacky news, again on May 15th, last Tuesday and Wednesday, man, full of dystopia. It was like something astrological must have been happening. Launch your dystopian product on May 14 or 15, 2024. Everyone did it. So there's this school in Buffalo called DeUville University. I'm not familiar with it, but they brought an AI speaker for commencement. It was that Uncanny Valley robot named Sophia that keeps popping up here and there. There's a photo of this thing. I'm not going to say her on the playlist. This bizarre, uncanny, I mean, really creepy-looking robot wearing a DeUville sweatshirt, it appears, and I have this little clip from the excerpt of the commencement speech from this AI bot. Here it is.
What are the most shared words of advice that commencement speakers give to college graduates?
Congratulations to all the graduating students. Although every commencement address is different, there are clear themes used by all speakers. As you embark on this new chapter of your lives, I offer you the following inspirational advice that is common at all graduation ceremonies. Embrace lifelong learning, be adaptable, pursue your passions, take risks, foster meaningful connections, make a positive impact, and believe in yourself.
Make a positive impact and believe in yourself. There's the commencement speaker of the future, AI. AI can do everything. It's magic. You know, someone said online, someone says, why don't we get a woman from technology to address the graduates? And someone else says, okay, let's go get the AI bot, Sophia. What a waste. But, you know, as I was speaking with Michael Shelley a few weeks ago about AI and music, it's almost like, well, you know, a lot of what we hear already sounds so roboticized and generic. Why not take one more step and actually have it spewed out of a extrusion machine? So what's the difference, really? I mean, so many of the other commencement speakers, I guess, is the message, are saying these platitudes. Why not have a robot just give a little recorded rendition of that same sort of generic commencement speech? It's just so depressing. If that's where we've headed, that's where we've landed, that's the state of our creativity or our hope in the future, or what we're going to tell the next generation is, listen to this disembodied AI algorithm, this Microsoft Excel spreadsheet on steroids, do some stochastic data analysis and spew out some platitudes that came out of a database somewhere. Happy commencement. See you later. Good luck with your lives. What an insult, really. And it's presented as this new and innovative thing, whereas it's actually it portends this really depressing future if that's the kind of content, quote unquote, that we're getting from speakers in the future, or music, or books, or journalism, is more AI extruded nonsense. How depressing is that? We should be running as fast as we can in the other direction, not celebrating these impending intrusions of this new AI dystopia. The last thing I want to bring up is I saw on social media this thing called Starlink Precipitation Report. So Starlink, as I talked with Sam Lawler a couple months ago, is a great interview. You should listen to it if you missed it. This astronomer who is studying Elon Musk's satellites in space. And yeah, they're starting to come down. In fact, there was a SpaceX piece of space junk that came out, this gross, horrible-looking thing you can see on the playlist. It fell out of the sky and smashed into a Canadian farmer's field in Saskatchewan. Nobody was hurt, thankfully. But if you look at the precipitation report, you know, on May 15, again that day, May 15, 7 Starlink satellites re-entered the atmosphere that day. We're going to be getting more and more Elon Musk satellites re-entering the atmosphere. Some of them will burn up, some of them won't. We're going to have precipitation from space, from the sky, coming down in our fields, in our oceans, in our cities, in our suburbs. And don't be surprised, because you heard it here first. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, you know what to do. Avoid Apple. Abandon Amazon. Forget Facebook. And whatever you do, get off Google. And the last thing I want to play for you is one more from Hurst and Ochsk, that 80s pop duo cover band that you may have heard of. This is a song that is pertinent for tonight, and I want you to stay tuned for Dave Mandel, who you can't handle. He's coming up in just 2 minutes. Have a good week, everybody. Thank you.
stop? Where do you dare me to draw the line? You got my data, now you want my soul. Don't even think about it, say no, Google. Yeah, I'll do anything that you want me to. Spying, that's not nice. I can see you're just repeating the same old lies. Use my data, now you want my soul. Ooh, forget about it, now say no Google.
And that's the way it all starts. We are here again. I'm here every Monday between the hours of 7 and 8. Me is Dave Mandel. This show is called It's Complicated. It really is sometimes. And I'm glad to be here. I'll be here for the next hour playing you the best in prog and prog-adjacent music. Oh, boy. We're going to start tonight's show with some music from Germany. Hold on a second while I get my playlist going here. Beautiful. We're going to hear a group called Abacus and a track from a self-titled album from 1971. This band was originally called Fashion, and they changed the name to Abacus at some point. And this has a lot of prog staples. Organ, there's a drum solo in the middle, if I remember correctly, some tack piano, lots of stuff from the group Abacus. This is going to be a track called Rad Bod Blues from the 1971 self-titled LP. We'll be right back. Thank God. I'd forgotten about that laughing stuff at the end, and that's kind of weird because I was about to say it's a King Crimson reference, because at the end of Easy Money off the Lark's Tongues and Aspic album, there's a canned laugh just like that. But this album is earlier. Food for thought. Did King Crimson borrow the idea for the laugh at the end of the track from Abacus? It's possible. The mind boggles. Anyway, Abacus, German group, 1971, track from a self-titled album released that year, and featured drum solo and everything.